Welcome to Calming the Chaos Podcast, where we help you find peace in a chaotic world. I'm your host, Tracy Canella, licensed mental health counselor. Calming the Chaos provides self-help resources for people in crisis. It's not a substitute for counseling or psychotherapy. Thanks for tuning in. And now, let the chaos begin. I started Calming the Chaos podcast back in 2019 when I started to notice some of my clients coming in especially overwhelmed, stressed out, really feeling anxious. And so that was even before the pandemic. Now what I'm seeing is the same thing, only more tired. And also people are talking about, I might be on the autism spectrum, or I might be neurodivergent, or I might have sensory processing symptoms. So I am really looking forward to the interview today with Dr. Rebecca Jackson, because Dr. Jackson is an expert in all of this stuff. She can describe to us sensory overload, so we don't have to look at this on TikTok anytime soon and diagnose ourselves. She's just going to describe what it is, and also how it can lead to some chaos in the brain. Now, I'm a brain person as far as we're talking about thinking, feeling, and doing. She knows all about brain chemistry and all of the neuro stuff that I don't know about. And she can tell you a little bit more about herself and her background. But for now, I'm going to leave it for there because I really am confused about what's causing all this chaos in our kids, especially. They're asking me, am I on the spectrum? I can't tell them that. I'm not an expert in analyzing that. And they also go to TikTok to get some diagnoses. So I'm going to bring Dr. Rebecca Jackson up to Calming the Chaos podcast and hope that she can help us sort some of this stuff out. So welcome, Dr. Jackson, to Calming the Chaos podcast.
Thanks, Tracy. I have to tell you, I absolutely love the name of your podcast, because for all of us, life is chaotic and we're all just trying to make our way through day by day. And we live in a world where there's so many things that we can't control. So what I love talking about and sharing information around are what are the things that we do have an opportunity to influence in our world to try to control the chaos and be the best version of ourselves and for our kids.
Right. Yeah. And I got the copy of your book that you read, which is called Back on Track, A Practical Guide to Help Kids of All Ages Thrive in the Age of Sensory Overload. And I have read the chapter on the sensory overload that you had recommended, and other chapters as well. It's an excellent book. And you, I had learned from reading the back of your book, you're an actual board certified cognitive specialist. So I was like, wow, I'm so blessed to have you on my show.
Well, thank you. And you know, as you describe the brain, I have to tell you, where the more I learn, the more I feel like I know nothing. The brain is so complex and there's so much to still discover and learn. We're in such an exciting time when it comes to neuroscience, where we are learning more and more every day, but it's tip of the iceberg. So I always say, I always try to surround myself with people far smarter and far more experienced than I am in other areas, because we can all learn from each other. We all learn about things through the lens of what interests and motivates us. And so I will learn as much about the brain through you and your experiences as you will from me, and we'll hopefully keep learning and growing together.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about yourself, because you've got a whole list of accolades that without doing this and that with my eyes, I probably couldn't do myself in the intro. So tell us all about your affiliation with certain places and doing certain jobs and roles and who you are.
Sure. I started my professional life as a chiropractor. And if years ago you told me this is where I was going to end up, I wouldn't have believed you. But I've always really been drawn to understanding the cause and why behind things. So I'm the person, if I have a headache, I'm going to be more likely to stop and ask myself, am I well rested? Have I had enough to drink for hydration? I want to understand why the headache's there in the first place. And so I really, that chiropractic philosophy of getting to the root cause really appealed to me. And I've always been passionate and interested in learning about the human body and what we can do to be the best version of ourselves. But then really my journey began when I was a young mom. I wanted to learn everything I could about kids and development. And, you know, there's so many great resources with singing songs and playing patty cake and, you know, taking your kids to the sandbox and the water table, all of that play. I wanted to know the neurology behind it. I wanted to know as a parent, what could I be doing to really drive and optimize success and development for my own kids? So that started me down the path of taking a lot of additional coursework in functional neurology and the neurology of pediatric development. And at that point in time, I was a young mom and I was watching some friends that had kids and they had concerns. They were starting to ask the question of, is this right? Is this on track? And I watched a lot of parents really feel blown off when they would ask the professionals in their lives. The answer would often be, he's a boy, be patient, give it time, let's see if they outgrow it. And that didn't sit well with me. I want action, I want knowledge, I want understanding. And so that just continued to fuel my interest and passion in learning what can we do today so that I don't need to worry about if my child's development is on track or off track down the road. And then really understanding that we talk about development, but that impacts us whether we're a child or an adult. Our skills and abilities for you and I here today, our ability to pay attention, to utilize our executive functions, that stems from our early development and how our brain came together to provide those functions. And so my education led me to Brain Balance, which was the actionable way to be able to create change in the brain. Brain Balance is all about strengthening and improving the brain so that a more mature brain is better able to pay attention for longer, block out distractions, more age appropriate in learning and social interactions. So that was a long-winded answer to describe a long winding path, but it's my passion for learning, my passion as a parent, really brought me to where I am here today.
That sounds fantastic, especially because I do believe sensory, one of the things that I try and do when we're trying to calm the chaos is get in touch with your five senses. And a lot of people end up maybe resonating with one or more senses. And so sensory things are very important. We're sensing things all the time. Sometimes we're not even aware of it. And so I did put the website up there for Brain Balance. That's for you who don't have the YouTube version of this, www.brainbalance.com. What do you do at Brain Balance, Rebecca?
So I started as a center owner. My husband and I, for a decade, owned and ran three centers in the Southeast. We live in Raleigh, North Carolina. So for a decade, we worked directly hands-on with the families and the kids. So we got to see the questions and concerns parents were coming to us with. We saw what the struggle and challenges looked like in the kids. And then we saw the impact of the program of when the brain matures and strengthens, how that changes life, your ability to make and keep friends and keep up and pay attention in the classroom. And after my role as executive director there for 10 years, the Brain Balance Home Office team asked for me to come on board and join the executive team there. So my current role for the past 5 years is I'm chief programs officer, which means I get to build and develop new programs. And I head up research. And the research side of things is so fascinating. For 10 years, I lived it. I saw the changes taking place. But now to dive into the data and the research, to be able to see through objective measurements the changes that we're driving and creating. And we see consistently reduction in challenges with impulsivity and hyperactivity, as reported by parents, teachers, and clinicians. We see measurable change in development. And again, to me, it's all about what can we drive in the brain that translates into change in real life? So I want to know that my graphs and charts are improving and what we can measure, but then I want to know that your life is changing in real life, that the child's experience in the classroom, that life is getting better as a result of those gains and improvements.
Now, we'll go ahead and take a trip to the website a little bit later, but I want to talk about your book, because I don't know if you were working at Brain Balance and you had had that backdrop when you wrote the book, or you wrote the book first. And for those of you who are not familiar with the book, it's right here with me. and it's called Back on Track. Now, you've noticed Rebecca has said parents are really very interested in knowing if their child is on track. So is that why you named the book Back on Track?
It is. And to me, the book is all about hope and an action plan. Is we all have areas of strength and weakness, but I don't want people to feel stuck. And that's, I love what's happening in science today, is that knowledge and understanding that the brain can change. And there's many different ways to change and influence the brain. But first, to understand why you're seeing what you're seeing, and then what you can do to change it. And so I want everybody to know that there's always a path to get back on track. You don't have to feel stuck and frustrated with where you are, but starting with an understanding. And you're exactly right in that it was both my experience at Brain Balance and my experience as a parent and a professional actually during the pandemic that prompted me to write the book. I've had my 15 years of experience at Brain Balance and research has just continued to fuel my passion and interest, and to see firsthand how much change truly is possible. But then the pandemic hit, and I saw this escalation of concerns from friends, from family members, from neighbors. We saw it at Brain Balance of, you know, I feel like the pandemic took a fire and just amplified it. We poured fuel on the fire, and we see greater concerns with ADHD in more people. We see increase in challenges with depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, a greater achievement gap. So there was a very real impact on both kids and adults from the pandemic. And at the time, early in the pandemic, I was doing many, many media spots. And so, you know, joining the national news to talk about, or local news to talk about what we are seeing, how parents could navigate the pandemic with the kids. But all the headlines were talking about the negatives and the challenges. They weren't talking about what do we do with this information? What's the path forward? And so that's really what prompted me to write the book, was we know there are so many tough things happening right now, but what are we equipped to do and influence to improve outcomes?
Mm-hmm. Like you said earlier, you wanted to know the cause of the headache, and then you can actually go in there and derive some practical solutions. If you haven't had enough to drink some water, right? And so the book was actually written during the pandemic, is what you're saying.
It was. You know, it started really in 2020, and I didn't even realize I was writing a book at that time. It was the writing I was doing for interviews and articles. And you know, saving all of those notes and the research I was doing for those pieces at the time. And then I just, you know, there was one particular research piece that came out that just hit home for me. And it was an article or a research piece looking at infants 6 months of age that were born during the pandemic. And infants at 6 months had structural changes in their brain. The babies born during the pandemic, their brain was different than babies not born during the pandemic. And then around that same time, I had a photo shoot with a local photographer. And she told me that she had to change how she was doing photos for infants at 1 year old. It used to be that parents would bring in, they'd set them down, they'd do these cute, fun photos. And these one-year-old babies coming to her, the parent couldn't set them down and walk away. She had to have the families socialize the child before they came in. They had to practice setting the child down and walking away. So I saw in the research that there was structural change in the brain. And then in the practical application, this photographer noticed a difference in babies. And that, to me, that was the spark that gave me the energy to write the book, of parents and educators and professionals need to know this information.
And you wrote it so well. It's like a guidebook. It really truly is, in that it has these steps that you can take at different developmental times in kids' lives. And I have to wonder, after what you just told me about the infant pictures, I have to wonder about the teenage brain is not actually fully developed, and all of those teenagers or preteens and all of the things that were happening and not happening at the time of the pandemic that affected their brains, or maybe because the brain does have the ability to change back and forth, right? I don't know if there's any research on that. That's a whole other rabbit hole. But boy, you've really kind of opened my mind to even thinking about that kind of thing. Like, how has my brain changed? I'm an adult. Yeah. It can change. And I definitely know that there's sensory input in my life. And probably more of it, because we were always checking our phones or our devices to see what kind of news was coming out during the pandemic. And we got really used to checking our phones a little bit more. So I do want to just use this as a bridge so that you can talk about what is sensory overload, and or what do you want to say about that, and what is it, and how do we define it actually, really?
Yeah, well, Tracy, that was the perfect segue, because one of the biggest changes that happened in the lives of kids and teens and even adults during the pandemic was a change in our daily sensory experiences. So if you think about what my life is today, this is, you know, 2024, so beyond the pandemic, I get up in the morning, I drop my son off at school, I go to the lake, I go for a run. You know, I'll swing by a coffee shop and grab a coffee on the way home. I run to Target because we're out of toilet paper. I go to the grocery store to grab groceries. You know, it's Friday evening, so we've got, you know, dinner plans with friends out. Each one of those events is a rich sensory experience in and of itself. My morning run around the lake, it's different every day depending on the weather, the breeze, the sun, the rain, the smells walking into a coffee shop of, you know, the roasting coffee beans and whatever else they're serving, the restaurant that you go to. All of that changed during the pandemic. It became a Groundhog Day experience where we all experienced a limited sensory palette, sensory experience over and over and over again. So our house smells the same pretty much day in and day out. If you're barefoot in your house, you're going from the same carpet to the same hardwood floor. You're interacting with the same people. It's the same view out your window. So we really cut off our rich and varied sensory exposure and sensory experiences. And our senses are everything. Our senses is how we learn. It's how we engage and interact with the environment. And when we have any disruption or dysregulation in how the brain takes in, processes, and reacts to sensory information, it can disrupt attention. It can increase or create anxiety. It can interfere with our ability to regulate our mood and emotions. So our sensory system is, to me, the foundation for all of life's experiences. So when you ask the question of what sensory overload is, sensory overload can happen to any of us and all of us. You don't need to be a child. You don't need a diagnosis. When we're tired or hungry, our brain is more negative and is going to have a harder time processing information. So if you're a person that can go to the mall around the holidays, right? It's the busy sensory overload. You've got the smell of Cinnabon and bumping into people in the crowds. That's something that on a day, most days I'd be able to handle it pretty well. I'm going to be pretty exhausted and drained when I'm done. And it's because of the amount of sensory input. But now if I go into that same scenario and I'm extremely stressed, I'm so worried about what I have going on for work, or I'm worried about what's going on with one of my kids, my threshold to tolerate all of that gets lessened. And now if I'm exhausted and I'm hungry, I have less and less of a tolerance for that. So I'm going to hit my personal threshold of what becomes too much for me faster when I'm stressed, when I'm tired, when I'm hungry. So we all hit that point of sensory overload where it becomes too much, too overwhelming. It's too much for our brain to process and take in. And as adults, we know how to naturally self-regulate, or most of us do. So when it becomes too much, we leave. We know what to do to change the environment to naturally provide our brain what it needs. We go and grab something to eat, or we go out to our car where it's calm and quiet. But when we have kids, they have less of an ability to self-regulate. And if kids or adults have any gaps in their developmental milestones, any immaturity, they're going to have a harder time self-regulating, and they're going to have a smaller threshold, which means they're going to hit that point of sensory overload much, much sooner.
Mm. Yeah, what you're describing is kind of like when you have these video games with your strength on the side. You know, if it's really high, you can withstand a lot of stuff. But if it's lower, you're stressed out, you're worried about stuff, you're more vulnerable to, I love that shopping mall to illustrate the, I mean, because I could just see it. That takes in all five of the senses right there with the sound. I don't know that you mentioned that, but I was thinking, yeah, they got the Christmas music blaring and they got people talking and you smell the cinnamon, you're bumping into people. So that's touch, you know, you might be eating something. So that's taste, right? So that's, exactly. That's a perfect example of it. But so how do we know, is sensory overload a thing? And if so, how do we know we have it?
Yeah. So I'm going to differentiate here between a sensory dysregulation or a sensory processing disorder and sensory overload. Sensory overload is something that we all experience, you know, regardless of the maturity of your system. We all have a threshold where too much is too much. And all of us, our threshold varies on the day. So again, if you're stressed, fatigued, hungry, experiencing pain, it's all of those things chip away at our resources, lowering that threshold. So that sensory overload, and we can all experience that. And think about how you feel in that moment. You're more cranky, you're more irritable, you have a harder time making a decision. But again, when we have a mature system, we know how to navigate that to give ourselves what we need in that sensory break. A sensory processing disorder or dysregulation in how the brain takes in sensory information is really going to impact so much more. So it's going to happen not just when you're tired, hungry, stressed, irritable, not just in those extreme examples. And it can really vary. You can have a child or an adult that overprocesses some sensory information where maybe they're really susceptible to loud noises and they can actually underprocess other information. And so maybe they bump into somebody in the hallway and it was really hard and they didn't realize how hard they bumped into somebody. And now the kid in the hall is mad at me because I bumped into them and I'm like, what? I didn't do anything. So we can have not all senses always develop exactly equally. So we can have this variation in overprocessing some information while underprocessing others. So sensory dysregulation is a difference in how the brain, in the accuracy of how the brain takes in and responds to that information. And I see parents minimize this all the time. And it comes, you know, from a good place of, oh, he's just a sensory kid. You know, he doesn't like to get his hands dirty, or she just doesn't like loud noises, but she's so smart. She's social. He's so athletic. You can have disruption in sensory regulation pieces and still have incredible other strengths. Both can be true. But what we know is when our sensory system is our foundation for so many things, what that looks like in older years is a child that's going to have a higher likelihood of struggling with anxiety, a higher likelihood of struggling with attention, of keeping up in the classroom, because we rely on our senses to give us accurate information. And so if I can't trust my information, if I struggle with auditory processing and I can't keep up with the words in the classroom, the directions that the teacher gave me, and now I'm sitting there and the teacher's yelling at me saying, you're not paying attention, you didn't try, you didn't get your work done, you didn't do this correct. And it can present in so many different ways. So sensory dysregulation, it will present in kids, but it can affect adults as well.
Mm. Definitely hear that a lot with, I work with eating disorders and, you know, so with ARFID, which is avoidant restricted food and feeding and eating disorder, ARFID, that is completely sensory. Well, not completely sensory, but a lot of it is sensory, like the way that food textures affect the processing of the brain and how people are avergent to food. For that is one of the symptoms, the many symptoms of ARFID is that, yeah, the texture of food will get in the way of a lot of things and the kid will stop eating. And that's really dangerous. So it's very interesting to notice that you're saying the same thing about maybe even somebody is very sensitive to the lights in Target. I hear about that all the time. Like, oh my gosh, I can't go into Target without my sunglasses because the lights are so bright or the sounds are so big or whatever it is. And people do seem to think that being super sensors is a bad thing. And I always say that, well, you know, in certain situations, you want to have good equipment, and that's your sensory system. Like, we want to be able to detect the weather or an earthquake, and we want to have sophisticated systems. And sometimes in some certain situations, they don't serve us really well. So because they're overly sensitive in situations where they don't need to be.
Yeah.
So thank you for defining that, differentiating. And what does that have to do with what we're calling and what these clients of mine are coming in and saying, well, I watched some TikToks and I think I got autism. I think I got neurodivergence and all this other stuff. How does that even relate to the conversation that we're having here?
Well, I want to go back and comment, you know, when you're talking about ARFID, one of the things that I think is so key for us to understand is my sensory experience is not your sensory experience. And we all assume, because that's all I know. And so it's so important, and it's hard, right? If you're a child and the taste and textures are interfering with your ability to eat and handle and tolerate food, it's so easy to want to say, just do it. Just chew more. It's not that big of a deal. But it's very real for the person experiencing it. And know when they're describing any sensory experience, don't assume that they're experiencing what you are.
Yeah.
And for the individual that super seeker, that super sensory person that you were describing with those heightened senses, you know, there are some great pieces there where maybe your eye is going to catch movement before somebody else or detect sound. But when your brain is overprocessing that information, it's having to process more. And that's draining and fatiguing. So there is a cost to that. And I think, you know, this is taking the conversation in a whole different direction, but the impact of trauma on our sensory system, I think, is fascinating, where when there's a trauma experience, it changes how the brain takes in and processes sensory information. It puts the brain in a constant state of high alert. The brain is trying to be that super sensory seeker to detect everything, because your brain is trying to determine, is this environment safe? And so it really, trauma can really change a sensory experience, puts you on high alert, which is incredibly, incredibly draining and fatiguing.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for that, for sure. I know that I think I call them the bulls and the butterflies. You had said earlier, maybe we're bumping into somebody in the hall, say, and one's like, ow, it really hurts so much. They might be a little bit fragile, more on the butterfly end of the spectrum, where a little grain of sand on their wing is going to really affect them. Whereas on the other side, there's the bulls, and they just kind of charge through everything and don't feel. And then there's all these points in between, right? So I like to see it as on a spectrum. And if you're over here on the super feeler side, there's things that you can actually do to mitigate that. Whereas I'm not really sure you can grow sensitivity on the bull end. So that's the thought I had about that.
I love the bulls and butterfly analogy, and you can change things on either side of things. And so, you know, I think of it, we actually just did a webinar yesterday for Brain Balance on understanding the senses and what you can do. And we were talking about it in terms of sensory seekers and sensory avoiders. So a sensory seeker is the child that is just constantly running and moving and playing. They're in such motion and they really like that deep pressure and deep touch. They may need a high amount of sensory input for it to register in their brain. That is a sign of immaturity in the way the brain is processing and reacting to information. On the flip side of that, the sensory avoider is the person that's wanting to avoid that big sensory experience. That's also a sign of immaturity, just in a different way. But I want to come back to your question on TikTok, because I didn't answer your original question. I took us down a whole other
path. Yeah. No worries. And I had three in one. So I figured you're a pretty sharp cookie. You're going to keep them straight. So thanks for remembering. Yeah. What about these self-diagnosers? TikTok. I think I'm autistic. I think I'm on the spectrum. I think I'm neurodivergent. What do we do with that?
You know, TikTok is not the place for medical advice or diagnostics, you know, as a start. But, you know, I think some positives have come from the pandemic. I love that we're talking about these things so much more openly, and I feel like there's less of a stigma than there used to be. And so people are talking so much more openly about my ADHD brain, or I have a learning disability, I'm struggling with depression, or I'm facing anxiety, or my child is facing anxiety. Our brains are complex and the world is complex, and we're all, you know, just trying to do the best we can. So I love that we're talking about neurodiversity and brain health and mental health and wellness. Just, I feel like we're much more open in our conversations around it, which is such a good thing. So, you know, part of talking about it more openly is it is in places like TikTok. And everyone's experience is different, and it's wonderful to hear everyone's experiences. But it's important to not take bits and pieces of information to try to paint a whole picture. And so just because, you know, like I said, we all have a sensory overload threshold. Just because you reach that threshold doesn't mean you have a sensory processing disorder. Maybe you were tired, stressed, hungry. Just because as you're working on a project, your brain is bouncing from thought to thought does not mean you have ADHD. It might mean, again, that your brain's tired. You've gone past your natural attentional window, and now your brain's telling you you're using a different aspect of attention. Again, that doesn't mean you have ADHD. And so partial information can be dangerous. It can send us, you know, in the wrong direction. But I love the open conversations. And so if you're wondering, based on that information, am I on the spectrum? Do I struggle? Continue asking questions, but go to the professionals that can look at the whole picture and take into consideration all of the information in order to really provide appropriate recommendations.
Yeah. How I treat it is that if they say that they might have autism, I would refer them to a specialist to diagnose them in that area. And then everything else is pretty much on a spectrum as far as the way I do things and in my work, because it's not all the same for everybody. And if we are sensitive, because everybody to an extent is sensitive to something, but it's the point at which it becomes interfering with your major life domains, which, by the way, I'll share with you right now, is my life domain palm tree, which is kind of neat. I am Hawaiian, and I like being able to show this picture whenever I mention life domains. So yeah, if your sensitivities are affecting school, maybe physical, mental, relationships, emotional, spiritual, there's other life domains, but that's just the one that I put on the palm tree, then there you go. You may need to get a therapist.
Yeah. Tracy, I love that you bring the life domains into it. One of the things that we talk about at Brain Balance all the time is brain health is health. It's mental health. It's our cognitive health. It's brain health is everything. And we talk often about the domains of brain health. And through the lens of development and optimizing our cognition, our attention, our sensory processing, what we look at in those domains of brain health is we want to make sure that, so we look at sensory, motor, cognitive, social, emotional, and behavioral. And what we do in our life to support all of those domains all work together. And if you've got a challenge in one domain, it's not just about that one domain. It's going to impact other domains as well, because everything in the brain is so interconnected. And I find often people are really focused on the one symptom or one area of concern, and sometimes lose sight of how far-reaching and how integrated those domains all are. So I just interesting to see the overlap in the domains of talking about things.
Hey, you're welcome to use the palm tree if you'd like. I have not patented it. And I love that you have I think you listed like five of them, those domains. And yeah, you could easily make a palm tree out of it, or a flower or something like that. So
I'm a Minnesota native, so I don't feel like the palm tree would be appropriate for me, but I love palm trees. So.
Well, so what are some of the things that we can do to manage the sensory overload? I know it's not just our devices that we're on. I know I mentioned that. You mentioned the mall. You also mentioned some good sensory input, like, you know, taking a run, going out in the weather, smelling some coffee in a coffee shop or something. But if we are overloaded, stressed out, overtired, in chaos, can you tell us some things that we might be able to do? Then we'll take a quick trip over to your websites. I have two of them up here, and give your promotional information.
Yeah, great. Can I give one plug for just a little bit of science as we talk more about the sensory system?
Yeah.
So I promise I won't go too deep, but there's this fascinating part of our system called the reticular activating system. The name's not important, but picture it to be like a gate or a garage door. And it has a direct impact on how we take in and process sensory information. And to me, the best way to understand this is to think about sleep. So when I'm awake versus when I'm asleep, there's all the same sensory experiences happening all around us. So if I'm in my room, I can hear the birds outside. I can see whether it's a sunny day or not. I can hear the dogs, you know, around, and there's the weight of the blankets on me. But when I'm asleep, my brain isn't taking in and processing that information. And it's tied to our muscles and our activation. So when I go from standing up and I'm using my core postural muscles to laying down and I'm no longer engaging my muscles, when I'm not engaging my muscles, that signals the brain to start to close the gate for my sensory system. So it starts to turn off that information, giving my brain a break from taking in and processing all of that information. And then when our alarm goes off in the morning and we reach over to turn it off, one of the very first things that we do is we start to stretch, because when we stretch, we start to fire those muscles, and that starts to signal to that reticular activating system to open the gate. It's telling our brain it's time to start taking in that sensory information. It starts to increase the level of alertness of our brain. So I think that's such a helpful example. So when we think about why, if our kids or if we spent an entire Sunday lounging on the couch, vegging out, binge watching our favorite show, why have I done nothing all day and I'm still groggy and sluggish? It's because if you weren't engaging and using your muscles, you weren't signaling to your brain to be alert, awake, and really taking in sensory experiences. So when we as adults or kids are spending hours scrolling on our phone, we're not engaging our senses. We're processing visual and auditory information. So we're fatiguing our brain from rapid processing without really signaling the alertness of our brain. And so when we think about how to approach our day and how to set ourselves up for success, our kids up for success, understanding the importance of exercise and movement and something as simple as sitting up to pay attention, when we engage our core postural muscles, it tells our brain it's time to be alert, awake, focused, and taking in information. So if I find myself stuck on a project at work or, you know, struggling to brainstorm or get my words out if I'm writing an article, just something as simple as getting up and going to the mailbox or getting up and doing some burpees or jump squats, just something to engage the muscles, and it doesn't need to take long, can re-signal the level of alertness in your brain. So that's
nice.
A strategy that you can use at all ages. But then really what you'll see in my book is I break things down in different age groups. So how we approach these things in infants and toddlers is very different than elementary school kids than it is with high schoolers. But the big thing to keep in mind is we want a variety of sensory experiences, and then we want to repeat those same experiences over and over, and then we want more variety. And so just really being intentional throughout your day of, for kids, I love them being barefoot, running around inside and outside barefoot because of the sensory experience of going from the grass to the dirt, to the concrete, to inside on the carpet. We can enrich our taste and smell sensory experiences by going to different markets. Go to, you know, we've got an Asian market down the road that smells very different than the Harris Teeter I normally go to. So being intentional about pushing the boundaries for some new and different and varied experiences, and then repeating that experience over and over, builds and strengthens the pathways in the brain.
Just like food, we teach variety is great. It's the spice of life or something like that, right? And I love what you said. And I remember flashbacks to my old childhood, you know, when we used to play tag or hide and seek, and we would go from the grass to the concrete, to the dirt, to the tan bark, or when we were on the playground. So that's a really great example of just adding variety, or at least moving your body around, walking to the mailbox, stretching it out, moving away from your computer for a little while, changing the scenery, going outside, coming back inside, and a variety of sensory experiences. I do have to ask you this, though, because I am almost a true crime addict. I probably need to get into a program. And I've always justified it, of course, the lawyer in me justifies it by saying, well, I am processing this information, but I'm also thinking about it in terms of how I would as a juror act. And I wonder if I'm wearing out my brain listening to these court cases sometimes. And I wonder what your opinion is about that, when you actually aren't just listening to something that is mindless on TikTok, or if it's a really short thing and you're just scrolling like tick after talk after tick after talk. But yeah, does it affect your brain if you're listening to long podcasts or things that actually make you think? Is that like taking in too much sensory information, or is there a healthy limit, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Do I need a program here?
Well, that's a complicated question, but no, just kidding. But,
there's all kinds of questions, but yeah, how do you know when to stop, I guess?
Yeah, you know, I guess the first thing, I'd say two simple things. First of all, not all screen time is created equal. And so absolutely, if you're watching a show that's also making you think and you're making connections, you know, that's a different level of engagement. Yes, that will still be fatiguing over time, but that's different than just scrolling YouTube videos mindlessly. So you are engaging some cognition when you're doing it that way. So not all screens are created equal. And then the other thing is moderation is the key to everything, right? Where I don't ever want to vilify screens. There's some wonderful things through technology that we have access to now that we didn't before, but it's finding that balance in life. And for our developing kids, for our own adult brains, our brains continue to change, even though we're through what we think of as the developmental years, but we strengthen what we use. So if I'm spending hours not moving, scrolling mindlessly, whatever it is that you're scrolling, for every minute that I'm spent doing that, that's a minute that I'm not getting a rich and varied sensory experience. I'm not using my muscles. And it's key to know the biggest drivers of brain stimulation and brain improvement is our sensory system and our motor system, our movement, our muscles. And so screens are okay. They're great. We all use them. But we really want to find a balance between also making sure that we're getting the sensory and physical, and that it's not just weighted towards, you know, for me, I spend my entire work week on the computer. And so the worst thing I could do is go from seated at my computer all day to seated in the living room with my laptop, a television, my phone in hand. You know, I need to get out and have social interaction, get out and have physical activity, take the dogs for a walk in the neighborhood. That is what I need for my brain health and wellness, so that I can be the best version of myself and my ability to pay attention, regulate my mood and emotions, remember information, apply it appropriately.
And I think it goes back to those life domains again, right? I guess if my YouTube true crime listening, it's not usually, I usually don't watch the screen, but if it is actually affecting one of those life domains, so I'm missing work because I want to hear a live court case, or if I'm, you know, affecting my relationship because I'm telling my husband to shut up because somebody's in the middle of a testimony, then we might want to consider going to a therapist, which, by the way, I think I have a therapy appointment today, which I'm so excited about, as per usual. So, well, thank you for all those wonderful tips. I appreciate that. Let's go ahead and take a trip over to your website. I just love this picture of you. It's right there, smiling face right there. Yes. Tell us a little bit about this website as I sort of scroll through, and we'll click on the tab that has your book on it as well.
Sure. You know, it's just a little bit of an introduction of I would say who I am outside of Brain Balance, but there's no Rebecca outside of Brain Balance. I've been so intimately involved with it for 15 years that it's just some examples of some media spots that I've done in talking about various topics. And the story about the photographer that really gave me that aha moment of seeing the babies different, that's the photographer that took the picture at the top of the webpage. And then there you see, it's a couple years old, but that's a picture that's my family. So that's my husband, Doug, and then my kids, Morgan and Drew. Morgan just got her driver's license. So I've got a 16-year-old. And then my 14-year-old is a travel hockey player. So that's a little bit about me personally.
Oh my goodness, this is great. Yeah. So then, and then it has some examples of how you've been in the media and what kind of things. And there's some expert tips for managing holiday anxiety. Wow. These look really super cool. Some of the podcasts you've been on and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, these are the accolades here, as seen on Forbes, Business Insider, TripAdvisor, all of these things. This is the website, and this is drrebeccajackson.com. Here is the book.
Yeah. The book was such a labor of love, but I'm so excited about it. I published the book with Mayo Clinic Press, which was such a great experience. It was a whole level, additional level of editing from their physician team, but just a really great crew there, and just so proud and excited about the book and excited to get it out there. I wrote the book that I didn't have as a young parent that I wish I did. And again, the book goes all the way through the teenage years, which really all applies to our adult brains as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. So great website here. And then what we're going to do now is we're going to go and take this away. Yeah, so we've already put up the website of brainbalance.com, and we're just going to go ahead and share the screen real quick here and have you tell us a little bit about what goes on at Brain Balance. I know you already have, but here we are. We work primarily with kids, or are there adults that you see too?
Kids and adults. The program started as just a program for kids, but all of the parents were saying, what about me? Can't you help my brain? So several years ago, we launched the adult program, and actually adult outcome research is what I'm heavily involved in right now. And it is so exciting because, you know, we say the brain can change at every age, and we're seeing it in the data. Our adults are self-reporting up to a 46% reduction in challenges with attention. They're seeing improvements in their ability to organize and prioritize their day, to complete tasks. And on the cognitive measures, the two biggest areas of change we're measuring in adults is their attention and their inhibitory control, which those are the two things we need to get through our day and through work. And so Brain Balance is a program for both kids and adults. We have over 70 locations all across the country. We also have an at-home virtual program. So we work with individuals all around the world. And it's a program, it's physical, it's active, it's engaging. I always say we exercise the brain the way you use it in real life. And the brain is a multi-sensory experience. And so we're engaging multiple senses while doing core muscles, physical coordination, rhythm and timing, eye activities, cognitive activities, auditory and visual processing. And all of that is designed to build new pathways, strengthen existing pathways in the brain, so the brain is more mature and you're able to pay attention longer, block out distractions more effectively, and regulate mood and emotion. So it's an incredible program that I've just been so proud to be a part of. And the research is just exciting. You see it firsthand in the kids, but then to see it in the data and in adults is wonderful.
So many programs, and also a virtual option if you can't make it in person. So check out www.brainbalance.com if you're interested in Rebecca's program. And so she's also available here. You can follow her on Instagram. That's Dr. Dr. Rebecca Jackson. And that's her Instagram. And you can also find her on LinkedIn. And that is the link. Those LinkedIn links are so long. And so hopefully I will have all these in the notes. Maybe even if you have a copy of the article, if you have a link to the article you were referring to about the infants, that would be really super cool to share too. If you don't worry about it. But okay, great. We'll put it in the notes, because I think it'd be really helpful for people to learn who are interested in more information.
Well, thank you so much, Tracy. It was a pleasure. And I have to say, I love the work you do. We change the brain, but we all need support and guidance in living our daily lives. And so to me, it's such a beautiful combination of we want to strengthen and mature the brain, and then we all need strategies and guidance in how to live our lives.
So true. Thank you so much for being a guest on Calming the Chaos podcast, Dr. Rebecca Jackson. And you take care.
Thank you, Tracy.
Thanks for listening to Calming the Chaos podcast. If you found this podcast interesting or helpful, please like, subscribe, and share it with your friends. You can also go to www.calmingthechaospodcast.com to listen to all Calming the Chaos podcast episodes. I look forward to sharing my next podcast episode with you. In the meantime, take care.
Howl at the moon or something like that.